Thank you. I'm still. I think it's here. Yeah, okay. That thing of God. So it's so bad.
Is there no light there to indicate on your charger? So it doesn't have off there.
No, I think it's look at that.
Yeah. But now it's off.
It's off now.
Yeah. Now it's off. Yeah, because that thing, you see that list.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Can I then tap my MPC over there?
No problem, yeah.
The committee?
No, not at all. Independent newspaper. Independent.
Oh. Which newspaper do you take, is
it? In the, we it's the United Group of Independent, so we write for 19. Different papers in South Africa and in South Africa, yeah.
Oh.
Cape Out of Cape Time, The Star, Independent, Sunday, Weekend August. My main focus is anything that happens in Parliament or related to Parliament.
And your name is?
Michael
who?
Bob. Michael Bob.
I'm Sibon Mokwit.
Sibon Mokwit. Please to meet you, sir.
Okay.
And you're the PMG.
Right.
Not big enough. The table.
This far.
Hey, oh, I see. Oh, yeah, now you cover this in the back there.
But now, hot.
Yeah. These are
the old school buildings. So, how long have you been with this guy?
I've been with them for about 2 months now, eh?
2 months now.
Yeah.
Where is it from?
Originally, I was studying at UTT, finishing off my politics and law. So now I'm with them, yeah.
Are you working as a journalist?
Pretty much. Now, basically. Political correspondent, yeah.
From UTT to independent. Mm.
Mm.
How did it happen?
I applied.
For your post?
Pretty much.
Of being a reporter?
Well, what happened was they were... they have the kind of an internship program there, so I kind of joined that.
Oh, that cadet school?
No, it's separate. So basically what I'm doing is I'm on the job and I'm learning at the same time. You know what I mean? So, but not part of the cadet school now. Yeah.
How the program looks for today?
Actually, I don't have an agenda.
Are we gonna be here till 6?
I hope not. I'm not sure, but I definitely hope not. I don't know. I don't think so.
It happens with this college, right?
Really?
Never.
Sure.
With this college, yes.
All right, members, our guests from the department, let's just wait for one member who's coming. We've got an unfortunate situation here. Parliament is rising on Thursday, on Friday, and we have been just given that directive. So we had to arrange these meetings, because if Parliament arises now, it means you won't have time. Opportunity to come and present before the portfolio committee, because when we come back, immediately sekungama public hearings. So we have got a predicament here, and unfortunately today is not our day, Tuesday. And what is normally done, the other committees meet in the morning, and then the other committees meet in the afternoon. They have taken that afternoon now, because those committees will meet on Tuesday. They could have met in the morning, and then we meet in the afternoon, because we share membership. So it has implicated badly in this committee, because our day is tomorrow. And unfortunately, tomorrow they've taken the whole day for the National Planning Commission. So this is something that is beyond us now. They've taken the whole day. So we don't have a committee meeting tomorrow, because we would have this session with yourself the whole day, but we couldn't. So that's Parliament. That's how we live. So there's nothing can do at the committee. So today we are going to have very few members, but we are going to continue. We can't stop. We can't stop, because they're not going to assist us anyway. Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's wait for one member who's coming.
Now, thank you, Chair. Chair, I also echo the sentiments that you've expressed. More importantly, we find ourselves in a crisis and a predicament. especially for the small parties like the Minority Front that have to go and serve our interests on various committees, but nevertheless showing solidarity to human settlements in the crisis that is used in KwaZulu-Natal. I'm definitely running in between meetings and I want you to take note of that.
Thank you.
we rather start. She's going to find us on our way. We can't wait for more than this now. You, honorable members and our guests from the department, I think they are led by Neville today. We take the opportunity to welcome you and our institutions, my chairperson. you are more than welcome today. Our agenda is not much, because we are going to listen to the strategic plans of the human settlements institutions, which is SRA, NETRA, and NHPRC. So we are still going to continue on Friday to listen to rural housing, NHFC, and HDA. So I thought it is important to put forward that you are still coming on Friday. We are still coming back. Because, as I have mentioned, that we are preparing for the public hearing on the budget, which is going to take place immediately when Parliament opens. So we just want to get a sense of your strategic plans on how you are going to deliver, as well as the performance targets, if you... Yes. But I think the overall picture has been set up by the National Department, but at the same time, we also, it is very much critical that we listen to the institutions themselves, so that when you come before Parliament, you are able to confirm that we have delivered according to your budget that has been allocated to yourself by the department, as well as to the strategic plan of the department. You are aligned, your objectives are aligned, as well as the targets are also aligned with the strategic plan of the department. So it is very crucial that we hear from yourself. With those few words, I would like to welcome you all. I think we can just introduce ourselves, because not all of us are familiar with, because I think there are members who are not familiar with the institutions, leadership. So can we start, Neville? Neville?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Neville Cheney from the National Department of Human Settlements.
My name is Cindy from the Department of Human Settlements.
I'm Morrison Gomezolo, National Department of Human Settlements.
This is Awuze Shah.
Morning, Chair. Eugene Teruma from the Social Housing Regulatory Authority.
Zora Ibrahim, Chairperson Shah.
Good morning, Anna Mukhariyane, National Human Settlements.
Good morning, Jan Marit, National Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, members. My name is Maya Mukazi from National Human Settlements. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Viwe Gweta from NETRA, Acting MD.
Good morning. My name is Sindisa Ngosani. I'm also from NETRA.
Good morning, I'm Norman Kinder from NETRA.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Tumi Mabalani from the Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, everybody. Mili Lesaba, Assistant to the Director General of Human Settlements.
Good morning, Sean Solomon from the National Department of Human Settlements.
Morning, Balisim Mako, National Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, I'm Tanya Katanga from the National Department of Human Settlements.
name. My name is Sidona Shabela. I don't understand.
Ndikuthi bongile maphoti ePMG.
Good morning, Michael Paul from Independent Newspapers.
Good morning, Roy Bula, member of this committee.
Good morning, Honorable Stephen Mukalapa, member of the committee.
Good morning, I am Leopold Roy, Research Human Settlement Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, my name is Kodisa Pasea, Committee Secretary. Thank you very much, members. Chairperson, over to you.
Good morning, Chair and committee members and fellow institution members and, of course, the department. I'm not going to take up a lot of time except to say that RCE Dianaholo will actually go through our strat plan and go through what our challenges for the next while will be. Thank you, and also what our achievements have been to date in discharging our duty.
Once again, thanks, Chairperson, and honorable members and colleagues from the department and other institutions. Just in terms of the contents of our presentation, we'll give just a snapshot of 2011-2012 and the framework that we used to develop our strategy, what the vision and the mission and values for SHRA is, the situation analysis, our organizational development state, functional structure, our objectives, and our targets, annual performance plans, and financials. I'll allow the chief finance officer to also talk on finances, and the corporate services manager to talk about the strategic objectives. Chairperson, as we look at 2011-2012, I'm not going to read all the bullet points. They will be covered in the presentation. But really, I think this could be summarized as the time and the period when SHRA had to make sure that the office is established and it's operational, but that at the same time, the budget that was allocated to SHRA is being used for what it was allocated for. We have, in that short space of time, more than doubled the delivery of the units that we had planned for the year, mainly because of support from the department. We've also processed quite a sizable number of applications for accreditation. About 33, only half of those institutions were conditionally accredited. Some during the year improved their situation, and four were fully accredited. We've had an unqualified audit, and we've had agreements with at least two provinces and the National Finance Corporation. There were about six project launches, including two by the Minister of Human Settlements and other ministers from the cluster who were invited. And we participated in Outcome 8 program. We've worked with Treasury within Human Settlements and National Treasury on the funding models for social housing. And we've had engagement with international players in Canada and in the Netherlands. We finalized the regulations for the Social Housing Act last year, and we had successfully introduced performance management system within the company. This is just the strategic framework that we used to develop our strategy. And really on the top line is just the actions that we would have to take in pursuing our strategy. What would be the strategic actions? Those are both the minimum requirements and the core competencies that we should develop as a company. What would be our must-win battles, even though the situation is not totally under our control? And how do we measure our success and business growth? And what capacities should we be developing as an entity? And our proposition is that what would be the key thrust of our work? And we're starting to say we have to look at 3 to 5 year horizons, not very short term, but it cannot be too long term as well. It should be realistic. And then we said, in that space, what would be the playing field? What would people be allowed to do? And whether people would understand what not to do in the playing field. And then what were the anticipated results? And I think this was quite a good discussion within the SHRA, taking into account that it is the first regulator in human settlements. Much as we were looking at what our mandates are, what the expectations were, we still had to think about the future. And then in that, then we had to understand our context, our market insights. Where are we operating? What is the rationale? What are the rules of the game? And what is the culture that we want to develop within the SHRA? So this framework, we found it very helpful in just trying to discipline our thinking and focus our thoughts into the kind of work that we are doing. We then looked at looking at the vision for the SHRA, the mission and the values, that the SHRA will be a world-class organization resourced by highly skilled personnel. It should be values-driven by leaders in the industry. So really what we would be saying there is that you don't just get people. We would like to get the best within the social rental housing sector. We know that there isn't a lot of people, but even then, you want to get the best or develop the best out of that. And then we'll fund and facilitate funding for affordable, well-designed, and environmentally sustainable housing estates. So as we get capital restructuring grant, we just don't dump it. It will have to be targeted strategically. And we'll ensure that investment in communities that form new or regenerated cities, which in turn enhance social mobility and access to basic tenant needs for health care, education, transport, and communication. And I think here, Chairperson, the vision is really to say, even if you are building these estates, what is it that you make available for these communities? It's not just an estate in the middle of nowhere. At least people have to have access to what we think are the basic needs: health care, education, transport, and communication. We believe that people can start then seeing their lives change. In terms of the mission, our mission will be to regulate and invest to deliver affordable rental homes and renew communities. So it's not only done, but we have to renew those communities. And the values, we are saying that the SHRA people are switched on globally and inspired locally. They lead with courage and act with foresight. They build trust and foster relationships. They do more with less, and they transform lives. And this is what we then came up with. In terms of situational analysis, just to highlight on this slide, is that we'll realize that the growth in terms of social housing would be between 2% and 7% if you just take all the provinces. So there is clear potential for social housing need in South Africa. It will grow. And I think this is what this slide is showing us. The next slide then shows us where our target market is. About half the population of South Africa is really our target market. Those are the people earning between 3,500 and 7,500 per month. It is expected that those people would more than likely reside in social housing estates, and that is our target market. So it's quite a huge challenge. It's half of the South Africans. The other interesting point that came up when you looked at the situation was that up to 2008, we had built 43,000 units. Now, remember that the social housing process started almost in 1997. So like 12 years after that, we built about 43,000 units. But with the introduction of the restructuring capital grant, from 2008 up to now, really in 3 years, we had built 10,500 units. I mean, that's just something that we have to think about. And below here, we kind of like just outlined the project that we had, more so with the restructuring capital grant. Chairperson, when you look at the challenges, the one challenge, and I think it was debated here in committee, was the issue on co-op housing as it relates to social housing. But we must understand that co-ops are included in the policy and are included in the Act. However, our reality is that the co-ops are not, at the moment, existing out there. You cannot point at them. So there is still a housing co-ops. So there's still a huge challenge for us to make sure that we mobilize the development of housing co-ops. The committee has actually mandated ourselves and the department to start researching more and looking at other partners that will assist us in building the co-op sector, the housing co-op sector. Do you want to make the point, Chairperson?
Yeah, just to say we have had a series of meetings. There is a National Association of Housing Co-ops, which we have met with from time to time. In fact, over a period of 18 months, we've had about 5 engagements with them. But from what we can see, there's a lot of groundwork that still has to be done before they are actually able to engage according to the way the Act says they must. And we're continuing that engagement with them because they say they've been around for quite a long time, but they haven't accessed any human settlements grants at all during that time or any other government grants. So, and partly it is as a consequence of their own organizational problems in different locations. So we're working with them as best we can, but at the same time trying to fulfill the mandate that we have to in terms of what we've set out to do in terms of outcome things. But that's an ongoing challenge and one that we're very mindful of.
The other challenge would be to get private sector involved in social housing. And as we know, you know, private sector, this is varied. I mean, they are small players, entrepreneurs, but you also have, like, big companies and the big banks to get those involved in social housing. We have already started the pilot to fund about 5 private sector projects, but it would still be a challenge to mainstream social housing within their products. Then we've all looked at these documents, the State of the Cities report, that mainly advocates for more dense cities, and more so in metropolitan areas, that this is becoming not only a challenge, but it's a reality. There is actually no space to vote to. So you have to start considering the issue around density and the recommendations from the National Planning Commission, which, I mean, I think we, in our view, that also tells us that the future for human settlements in South Africa may actually lie in social and rental housing. The issue of home ownership might be the wish and policy, but might not be achievable in the short term. In the short term, people will rely solely on social and rental housing. For the mere fact that if you have to put on a down payment for a mortgage, let's say if you are like at 15%, how many young people really have the money? And so therefore, social rental housing becomes one of the key instruments that government can use to enable people to grow and to develop. But it is a challenge that we have to meet ourselves. In terms of our organizational development state, I think the staff were also saying, please tell Parliament that we are not establishing the office now. We are in between performing and building the organization. So there is clear progress in terms of the structure that we had developed last year. There is an encouraging movement that the entity is developing and is making progress. This slide just shows the Shire Council. And of note here is that we've had one resignation from council, and the committee could note that resignation. We were talking with the chairperson. We still look at how we would get additional members just to make the numbers what they should actually be. But the council committees have been established, and they are all functional. And we just show you the committees that we have. We have the Audit and Risk Committee, HR and Ethics Committee, the Risk Committee chaired by Advocate Vipond, Ethics Committee was chaired by Ms. Shanaz Majid, and she's now being replaced by Ms. Nontutuzelo Nogaga. The Investment Committee is chaired by Ms. Sharon Trail, and the Regulations Committee is chaired by Advocate Nzala Litele. The chairperson of SHRA, she's next to me. I think everybody knows her by now. But our committees are working well. We do have the council charter. Council has an agreement with the signed with the department of the ministry. And this is the proposed new structure for the SHRA. Just, I think we have council and council committees, and there's the office of the CEO with the company secretary and the executive assistant and an administrative assistant. We have the corporate services manager with the knowledge manager, the research and development, which this we think is quite critical for our own sake as the SHRA, just to know what is going and what is cutting in the social housing and the rental sector, to be able to inform our work, but also to inform the department's policy development work. And it's got an assistant and an intervention manager. This post, we will recall that since social housing came into being, there were those other institutions that operated within the sector. But within these institutions, some of them were not doing well or are not doing well. And the SHRA has to intervene to address that problem. And then we have the lower structure. The CFO is here. We have the regulations manager and the investment manager and the other post below that. Chairperson, before I allow the CSM just to go on the strategic objectives, I think the points that we want to raise, which the slides were sent to you before we could include that, is that we have prioritized what we're going to do as the SHRA this year, because we think that process helped us last year. Our top priority this year would be to build organizational capacity for performance and organizational effectiveness. So that would be top priority. So staff development, developing the right skills, the experience, and the knowledge will be top priority. but also to build the business infrastructure, especially the processes and the systems. Because last year when we started, and we started to run very hard, there were other things that we did not do that we will eventually have to rely on as time goes on, so that then gets top priority this year. Top priority will be compliance with legislation requirements within specific time frames and the level of alignment with our mandate. That will be top priority for the SHRA. Of high priority will be alignment with the sector, research and development, to innovate in our projects and setting the sector benchmarks, norms and standards. And I think that question was asked already last time in this house as to what are the norms and standards for social housing. Do people know about them? And then continue with educating people around social housing and with communication. Just before I pause, just to say to the committee that at the moment, SHRA has about 21 staff members, and with the structure that I showed you, that would lead to about 30 staff, but it will not happen all in 1 year. Eugene, maybe I should just hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. The strategic objectives of SHRA are three. One is internally focused and the other two externally focused. The first one is the incremental implementation of the Social Housing Act, and it speaks about the further development of the SHRA footprint as a national regulator. It also speaks to the proper functioning of the SHRA Council. It speaks about the internal environment, and it speaks about a fully developed operational environment to support the business, including risk management and performance management. It speaks about providing the platform for efficient and effective regulation and investment programs, and it speaks about the rollout of subsequent phases of the SHRA outreach program, including agreements with relevant stakeholders. Chair, I'll take the small opportunity I have to remind you that the last time I was here, you said SHRA is a baby of this committee. The baby is now a year old. We're moving into our second year. And whilst we're establishing and developing the organization, we're also able to deliver. So strategic objective two speaks about the efficient and effective regulation of the sector. It speaks about developing subordinate legislation for approval. It speaks about ensuring annual accreditation of qualifying entities and accessibility of the register of these entities. It speaks about ensuring effective compliance and monitoring of the sector, and also speaks about deploying interventions as per the Act and regulations when necessary. And again, I'd like to remind the House that the Social Housing Act actually gives SHRA powers of intervention where there's mismanagement or instances where there's non-compliance with the regulations. The third strategic objective speaks about the efficient and effective investment in the sector, and it speaks about the optimal use of the restructuring capital grant in the delivery of social housing units. As the CEO mentioned last year, our target for delivery last year was 1,702 units, but we managed to approve 4,142 units, and we're hoping to live up to that ambition in the next 5 years as well. There's also provision made for capacitation grant funding, and this is strategic objective covers that as well. As mentioned earlier, we are looking to roll out strategies for the private sector and for the co-op sectors, and we'd like to point out that the private sector has come on board and we have a pilot program already. I know that in this year we received 10 applications from co-ops for registration, and those results will be produced by the end of this month. And then lastly, we're looking to form alliances and partnerships with local and international funders to create more adaptive funding models and to leverage more finance for the sector. The social housing model uses government money as well as private sector money, so going forward, we'd like to find a way that we could use both of these sources optimally. With regard to the targets, Chair, there are three areas. The first one is investment in social housing, And you see that for the 2012 period, we managed to deliver 4,214 units. For the period 2013, we're looking at 4,661 units, and 5,429, and so on. With regard to the second strategic objective, which is the accreditation, we are looking at 40 entities to be accredited or to be processed for accreditation in 2012, which we have accomplished, and the results, like I said, will be published later this month. In 2013, we're looking at 45 entities, going up to 70 entities in 2016. And when I say 70 entities, at that point it will include the private sector delivery agents and the co-ops as well. Although the private sector doesn't require formal accreditation, we are looking at some type of accreditation for them. With regard to regulation, we're looking at here interventions where the regulations unit actually proactively intervenes in some of the institutions and projects. And for the 2013 period, we're looking at 30 entities that we would like to make that intervention for, and going up to about 50 interventions by 2016. A further breakdown of that, if you look at it from a performance indicator point of view, would be the number of social housing units approved, which is covered basically in the previous slide. The second one would be the number of project feasibility grants issued, and you can see that over the period of time, we'd like to grow that. The third one is the number of gear-up grants issued. One of the objectives of SHRA, Chair, is to grow the social housing sector. I mean, in order to be able to do that, we will obviously have to provide some kind of staff gear-up funding. Then we look at the number of specific intervention grants issued, and this is where SHRA feels that an intervention is required. And in the last, 5 and 6 deals with the accreditation process, and the last one, which is a very important one that I'd like you to note, speaks about compliance inspections, where the SHRA, by virtue of the Act and the regulations, is entitled to actually inspect on a regular basis and on an ad hoc basis, dependent on the results of the monitoring and evaluation of the institution. This slide, Jay, gives you an indication of what the total number of units will be delivered over the period 2012-13 to 2016-17, and we are quite proud to say that over that period of time, we estimate that we will deliver 27,948 units, and we would have issued 245 institutional grants at that time. The financials follow, and I will ask through our CEO, if the CFO can just give us a brief overview of this. What I'd like to point out, Chair, is that the budget for SHRA 2011-2012 was $245 million, and the budget for 2012-13 is $668 million. So it's quite a sizable increase in the budget, and we would really like to thank the Department and Treasury for listening and for believing in the social housing cause. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Just to make 2 points, the one is that the institutional grant is the grant that we get via the provinces, so that goes to the partnership between ourselves and the provinces, both in the way the projects have to be approved and and agreed to by them, and so that we know that they are aware of it and they are committing funds, and also to say that the capacitation is not capacitation we do ourselves, because we're not allowed to in terms of the Act anymore, but we look at institutions that apply for these capacitation grants that are able to then help the social housing institutions. So that's just 2 points of clarity on that.
Thank you. The financial is basically the financial translation of what you already heard in the strategic plan. The apportionment has just gone across the various intervention grants, capacitation grants within the sector. This is the detail of the operating expenses as the budget was allocated to our private department across the various descriptions of the normal expenditure that the SHRA will incur. And this is another summarized view, again, based on income or revenue and expenditure of the budget, which talks to the previous slides. And this is the statement of financial position, which is basically the balance sheet. What I'd just like to highlight quickly in terms of the deferred government grant figure that you see there, as we presented yesterday to the department, is the initiatives around the expenditure of the deferred government grants over the period is basically dependent on all the projects that we've identified in the previous slides regarding targets that we would achieve. So that is really around the funding model that is applied in terms of when that expenditure is incurred, the projects are approved on the ground. And this is a cash flow position which definitely shows that the entity is liquid. We don't foresee any challenges from a cash flow point of view going forward. And that's a high-level summary of the operational and capital budget summarized in total as a percentage. You can see the operational capital over the term of the strategic period is fairly constant, and the capital budget is more also in line.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and your team. Never. Is there anything, unless you're going to respond to the question?
No, Chair, there's nothing from the department,
okay.
Unless, of course, colleagues have got inputs.
Okay.
But not from us.
You are welcome, Honorable Sosiba. Members, there's the report. Can we interact?
Thank you very much, Chair. We welcome the and we take note of the presentation. I think what is also giving hope is the issue of the unqualified audit. We would like to see it continuing because, as you know, the SOEs has got a reputation of being seeing the state as a cash cow and milking the system. But if funds are well spent, then it's a welcome process and program. Just a couple of issues that I would like to raise. The first one is in terms of the red tape. How do you deal with red tape? What is your turnaround time in terms of from the time you receive a proposal from a social housing company up until the actual groundbreaking when the project initially starts? So what is the red tape that you are seeing when you're doing this project, or have you had some ways to arrest the red tape? The second one is the challenge of renter. I have to agree with the CEO. I think when you look in the future, I think the rental and the social housing market will be the only viable way in moving forward to alleviate the backlog. So in terms of the rental, how do you see it fitting in ensuring that people get quality and affordable rental housing, especially social housing? Thirdly, is the issue of accountability mechanisms that you are putting in place. I'm encouraged to see that you are also working with private money because you get funding from private sector as well. Have you got very well-crafted accountability mechanism that ensures that we've got sustained private funding commitment to ensure that we always get private sector to assist us in this one? The other issue is the issue of accreditation. How do you ensure that those institutions that you are accrediting to do social housing projects has got enough capacity? Because we know that even the National Department, this is an Achilles heel for the National Department. know, capacitation of provinces and municipalities for accreditation to do housing projects. So how are you dealing with it in terms of ensuring that the institutions you are accrediting have got enough capacity to perform the projects that they are looking at? And the inspections, do you involve NHDRC on your inspection? Is it only about your side, or do you also include NHDRC as the custodian of housing compliance? And the last one is the issue of compliance. Do you only do compliance in as far as the rules are concerned, or do you do structural compliance or financial compliance? What compliance are we talking about? Is it the general compliance, or it's got it's specific that you are doing compliance in terms of this and this and that and that? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. I want to assure that I'm not going to be harping on the Kenobia project, because I know you want to rule me out of order, Chair. I'm very much concerned about, firstly, your monitoring and evaluation on your institutional grants. You speak about a competence of the interest of the province, on one hand, and on the other, in terms of the monitoring and evaluation and the legislations, what policy directives give you latitude to ensure what you want to ultimately achieve in what you say sustainable good homes? What kind of agreement and relationship do you have within the provinces? Well, I know KwaZulu-Natal is one of the very fast-developing provinces when it comes to human settlements. And there might be a concern about the quality of homes. And that leads me, I think the previous member did indicate what is the role of the NHDRC. I want to believe that you have your hands on. Yes, yes. I'm referring to the quality and... Yes, yes, that's right. Currently, I believe that Shra is in turmoil in, NHDRC, because of my apologies. you see, Chair, I'm going to limit myself today, because the previous speaker, had a mouthful. But these are just the concerns that are in the public domain and the challenges. And, we welcome, I see you've also spoke about a new structure about it. Could you inform us in terms of the previous structure, what is the financial implication? One. Two, what differs from the previous structure that you find it was pertinent to have in this structure? And three, instead of incurring an additional financial burden, couldn't that be accommodated in one of the other sub? Yes. The management is the body of dealing with the rental housing aspects, and then you refer to the entities. What control do you have over them after you have given them the jurisdiction of saying they can manage a certain housing development? Because you place a lot of emphasis on the issue of capacity building. And from my observation in the public domain, that aspect is in turmoil.
I'm not going to get into detail. You are fully aware of the challenges in KwaZulu-Natal, the evictions, the protests, and all of those kind of aspects. I am concerned that in view of advancing good governance and better operational structure that you are proposing, would you be addressing all those challenges, or you visualize that you will minimize those kind of challenges that are currently faced by the poor? Lastly, Chair, I want you to indicate to me what is the relationship between the, I hear you very clear, but also you deviating from the fact that the Minister did indicate for human settlements that transfer of property from one to another generation to create asset wealth. What, in terms of the National Planning Commission, does it give SHRA a complete insight to say that you must not worry about asset building and focus on more, what do you call it, commercialized money-making environment? That brings me to ask your 83,000 rand subsidy, which is a mandate by government, cannot be ignored in creating asset wealth, your relationship. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to apologize for being late. I'm sure there was a communication breakdown. Yeah, we will. Thank you. Chairperson, first and foremost, I would like to point out that the font that you are using is too small. We can't even see. And when you look on the board, you can't even see. It's so difficult. If you can improve it, please, for future meetings. You can't, you really can't see. But I've heard you saying SHRA will be a world-class organization resourced by highly skilled. How do you assess yourself that you are a world class? Another thing that I want to know is about the co-ops. Why is it so difficult after having about 18 months meeting? What is difficult? What is it that is so difficult with the co-ops? There was one resignation. Is that particular person been, that vacant has been filled? With the budget, no. Let me hold it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before you respond, Chairperson, when I'm looking at your slides on targets, what is the, because you have indicated that by 2016-17 you will have been approved 27,000, let's say 28,000 units. How does this relate to the targets that have been set by SONA, of which we are expected by 2014 to deliver 80,000 units? So how does this relate in your performance? Then the other issue I would like to talk to is the issue of strategic objectives. The objective number one, no, well, it's fine. Incremental implementation of the social housing. That one is fine. But you refer to your statement, you will develop a comprehensive rental program and host sub-program management unit as support. No, it's fine, that one. But I want to check from the department itself. Because in terms of the rental policy, it's an issue that we have been raising with the department. We have to say you do not have a comprehensive rental policy. Your rental policy is just it's linked to the social housing. It's not holistical. So now it means, Nina, you are already in the pandemic department. You're going to have programs that are related to the at the same time, you are also intending to expand to the private and the private rental. So I don't know, but I'm trying to work this in my mind. Because seemingly, Nina, you are moving a step forward. You are leaving your mother body. I would say so if they did not show that. But at the same time, I don't think sometimes you take the parliament seriously. These discussions, I'm not referring to Shra. I'm referring to all the department as well with its institutions. When we have these sessions, what you normally do, it's just my observation, is that you select issues that you believe that are in favor of your objectives, not the national objective per se. Always motivated statements, son. We have been talking about the SHRA itself, the act. How long are we going to talk about SHRA? SHRA does not accommodate our principles and objectives of housing cooperatives. You remember even when we were developing INAS, we were busy with the regulations. We raised critical issues there. But in your strategic object, there's nothing that relates to the amendment of the Act to ensure that. So you cannot run in our cooperative. We all of us, we are very much aware with that Act. I was accommodating Ndela, which is correct. Yes, we made mistakes, all of us. But now we are broadening whatever your objective. You can't say the legislation that was passed in that year, so the scenario was not the same as it is today. When we relate to co-ops, it's something else. It's ownership. It's ownership. So how are you going to address it without amending the Act? But what is very much important, how are we going to make sure that we are accommodating and that is going to, as I was going to tell you. So I think in the strategic objective, because I think the strategic objective, whatever you presented here, you should have discussed. I know that you discussed it with the department. But I'm not asking that question to you on SHRA alone. The department should tell us, because our cooperatives are oppressed. Here we are getting a statement, our cooperatives, they are nowhere. There's no proof that they are there. But we have been to Eastern Cape. There were housing cooperatives in our meetings. They came to present their situation that they are not assisted by the department. To such an extent, the provincial department undertook a commitment to say they are going to have that particular Amalinda, but it's not the only one. So from what Honorable Sosibo is raising to say you have been holding meetings, but there's nothing that is coming out. So it means one day we need to call you into this house. They made their statement, they made their frustration, because I think we called them one time, and we requested that you must go back and make sure that all of you with the department, make sure that you try and solve this. Because there are cooperatives, and we cannot say they are not. It is our responsibility to develop them. Who is going to develop them if we are not? So I think this issue, we even say we are going to roll out private sector and housing co-op strategy, but we know that our legislation is not yet, it has got loopholes in terms of developing the housing cooperatives. And it is unfortunate, this one, we're not going to compromise as a committee, because it is unfortunate, because this is a policy issue that has been taken, the issue of housing co-ops. Coming to the issue of, we all in agreement what the rental is going to, is the one that is going to take precedence. But the ownership, we cannot leave it behind. Asset. Creation of asset and wealth. We can't leave it behind. We cannot promote any. We have to make sure that we run them parallel. It's our responsibility. As a full one of us, renter forever. But the people buy a renter because they've got no other option. It's into the door. But having a renter forever, we can't promote that. We can't promote that. Yes, it is a fact that currently it's not easy. So if we promote those co-ops, let's not take co-ops again. No. That is why we always say, social housing is different from co-ops. We always say so. But we have to put the agenda in the department. You promote a certain section. So if you want to do that, we will agree with you, but we'll enforce you with the housing cooperatives to develop them. And they have changed. If I know about patterns, I don't know. You enforce it. What my day you learn to engage you. You can't. So now it's going to be a fight forever. Let me be prepared. It's going to be a fight forever from the side of the committee of parliament. After the Mama cooperatives, won't come to transit our hands because I phone in the Mama cooperatives. You are promoting the commercial, the private. So we can't allow that. Lastly, we talk of the quick snapshots. You're going to engage with the international funding. We just have, want to know on this agreement that you signed, when are those agreements ratified by Parliament? When are those agreements ratified by Parliament? It's the responsibility of this committee to ratify those agreements. So I think those issues have to be considered. Otherwise, we are very much appreciating the report, the part of that has been done, but really, there are some issues that we are not happy about them. I don't want to be strong enough. We are not happy about this issue of housing co-ops, the manner it is being driven by the department and yourself. Because sometimes, nani, we have no idea how many times, because we have to ask, what is your interest in this matter? What is your interest? Because the government of South Africa is very good. It allows for all public, private, and so on and so on. So that process you are undertaking, you are not saying it is wrong. But why are you trying to suppress the other side of the coin? Why need Fisher? My purpose with that is. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just 2 points on the issue of the rental and the cooperatives. On the rental, what we have done, and I think the issue is that within the department and SHRA, well, let me start from this point. Chair, what we're trying to do in the department is get the following, that the housing entities, the human settlements, departmental entities are part of the department. They're not outside of the department and they don't operate in competition to the department. And that's a fundamental issue and I think what we're trying to do is to instill that cooperative integrative process that we also don't want to duplicate capacity, we don't want to duplicate expertise, because what happens is, if you, and particularly in relation to, for example, SHRA and the HDA, we fund their operational budgets. So they are supposed to undertake an extension of ensuring that the departmental mandate is. And one of the constraints that we've had in the department is that particularly around the issue of the rental and social housing programs, it's been taken away. The initiative was taken away from the department. And this started unconsciously, consciously, and it started particularly around the fact where the rental and the social housing programs were funded with donor grant funding. And that had a consequence of particularly the fact that the sector itself thought it could operate outside of the department it didn't want to, and you had a substantial amount of expertise in inverted commas that sits outside the department, and the process that we're going through, particularly in the last 18 months post the establishment of SHRA, is to try and bring back that expertise and reassert the national department as a policy driver, a funder, and particularly a regulator and an innovator in that field. Because I think what has happened is that, I mean, we tend to forget that it was post-94 that a lot of these initiatives took place. And those initiatives took place within the state. And that's what we're trying to recreate. So when it comes to the rental and the social, part of the mandate that exists, or this collaborative mandate that exists between the department and SHRA, is for us to be able to particularly do an evaluation of where we at in relation to this. Because sometimes what we want to do is we want to fix things, or we want to correct things, or we want to amend them without actually understanding what we want to be able to do. And that agenda is now on the table, and it's a fixed agenda. I mean, for example, next week, I stand corrected, but there's still, we've reinstituted what is called the National Housing Rental Task Team, which is led by the department, which SHRA is a partner. And part of that program is quite correctly to consolidate and to create what we would want to term is a rental, a national rental code, you know, which covers all the aspects of rental housing. And the one issue that that we've raised, and particularly, I mean, colleagues from Shah will note this. We've indicated as the department one of our concerns is that the rental housing program, because of how it's been driven by, I mean, particularly the whole funder issue, is that it hasn't yet gone downstream, down market. So we've traditionally, we've all been party to this, consciously, unconsciously. So what do? We focus on the 3,500 upwards. So even if you look at some of the programs that we fund, particularly as a department, so no one takes care of those households below 3,500, and there's a substantial amount of that, and that program is one of the key issues that we want to deal with. So to get the department together with Shra is building together, and if you give us some opportunity, we can perhaps maybe in May present to you a consolidated roadmap of policy, legislation, as well as the implementation framework that will be there, that will unfold, but will also, this is not about the future, but in our current projects. I mean, one of the issues is that in our current projects, we're not undertaking, you know, everyone's focusing, because everyone now gets, you know, we all jump on the bandwagon, we say, yeah, you know, it's the affordable sector. But there's a substantial amount of households below 3,500 that are renting. You know, it doesn't matter if it's 150 rand or 50 rand, you're still renting. That's the rental. This committee must not be under the impression that Shra is leading the department. Shra, the mandate or some of the issues that Shra is taking is as a result of a collaborative effort between the department. So we said, why do we want to repeat that? And why are we building the capacity within the department? We'll do that. But, you know, the other issue is for us to also draw in the HDA, because some of its mandate issues have not been. And we've had some very frank discussions. Colleagues, Brian will tell you, we've had some really open, frank discussions about these things. I mean, it's like you were in our meeting yesterday, Chair, on the issue of cooperatives. And let me come back to the issue of cooperatives. On the cooperatives issue is that we also are not, what we've asked is that our policy unit prepare a concept note for cooperatives in human settlements. Not only in housing, but cooperatives, including housing, but in the big framework of because there's a whole factor. And how do we? So that policy will do that, and it'll find its way into the various programs, because we've got the social and rental, we've got PHP, we've got even in terms of sites and services. If you want to, I think what we must be very careful is narrowly look at cooperatives as only building houses. No, that's not it. So we've spoken about the NHFC. We've even spoken about contractor cooperatives, which Nurture should look at. There's funding cooperatives. So there's community funding cooperatives. So it's about the entire spectrum, and that policy framework can only come from the department and the respective entities whose job is not to develop policy but to implement that policy. That's where we're at. It has been slower than because Chair, you know, the point is that politically there's consensus about cooperatives. I think administratively, Chair, the developmental ethos is still, with all due respect to colleagues, I hope I'm not offending anyone, but there's a substantial amount. You know, cooperatives are a hard work, Chair. They're resource intensive. We've got to build the capacity. We've got to put them in place in certain instances where they are not, in certain instances where they are. I mean, our PFMA, our municipal legislation, our financial regulations are not there. So there's a substantial amount of work, not only in human settlements, but in the overall cooperative. So Chair, I mean, if you give us the space and time, but I don't want you to, or I don't want the committee to be under the impression that it's only about rental and social housing. No, it's about bigger than that. And that's what Shra is doing, and Brian will correct me here, is looking at a place for cooperatives within the social and rental sector, in conjunction with the HDA and in conjunction with the NHFC, because those are the two big capacity build. I mean, the HDA is probably the big capacity building focus areas, Chair. So I mean, you know, I'm not saying leave it for Friday, but it's an issue that we want to deal with. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think never what you are saying, we all understand. But the main problem is we are saying the department that is supposed to lead seems not to be taking the committee or parliament seriously. Because the issue of cooperatives is a long-standing. If the department is dragging feet in developing this policy, because what we are saying, we are generalizing when we raise the issue of cooperatives in terms of social housing, because we don't have something else that we can talk to. So that's why we have a problem. Now you are raising a critical issue to say there's quite a range of variables that can be considered in terms of developing cooperatives. But there's something, it's not there, and it's not assisting us as people who are playing oversight and as people who are making, have to make sure that the political objectives are being taken care of. So that is why we are saying Ushua is Wamba Pambi is taking a step forward in advancing with the permission from the department. They are advanced in terms of making sure that the housing cooperatives under the perspective of social housing is developing. But there's another component. So it goes back to the policy of the department and the legislation. So our point is this here. When are we going to make sure that the legislation that we have take care of the comprehensive issues around housing cooperatives? That's the issue. So that's the issue that we want to hear from the department. Not today. Not today. But we want it. When we come back, it has got to be it has got to get into our agenda. Because really, this is serious. But not today, we're not going to address it on this. Honorable Bula.
Chair, I think you were very, very specific and precise. Actually, I'm quite sad, you know. We raised some very, very serious concerns to Shah. And then, quite nicely and politely put over by the department. Now there is a contradiction. Because if the department says that they are given the directives by the framework and a certain legislation and policies, then if that is not in place, some of our concerns that we have raised around the issues of implementation and structural concerns might be putting the cart before the horse. Now, quite correctly, as Neville has indicated, that you've got to have this synchronization. And Chairperson, just lately, we were dealing with the issue of the amendment of the rental bill, and we were speaking about tribunals and all of these kind of things, in order for what you correctly pointed out, certain pieces of legislation that has been presented to this committee and amended to deal with the changing times and challenges of human settlement has to be addressed. I don't know, Chair, we're going to listen to the responses, but I don't know how you're going to respond to the issue of the fact that certain issues that you cannot, are you going to give it back to the department and say to the department, okay, fine, go and get your framework, go and get your pieces of legislation and all, so it can give us the latitude to deliver in this particular area. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. That is why I'm saying we need an ample time to this. I've said not today. We are going to have a special day to deal with this matter. Not today. Because if we open it today, now, it's going to take us a day. Because we won't agree. You can try to justify something that is unjustifiable. Because Unevel has done, at least he has summarized this in a manner that is understandable, that there are milestones that need to be addressed. But what we are saying, for how long are we saying we are addressing these things? Because this is not an issue that has been raised today or yesterday. It is a long-standing issue. That's what we are saying.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'll start and then my colleagues will continue. First of all, I think what would have helped is just to say that social housing is a very small portion of the whole housing spectrum. It's defined by the Act as that, and we have come into existence as a consequence of that Act. And we really have only been in existence since the 1st of January of last year. And that's the reality of things. For the 5-month period before that, the council existed without any office support or anything like that. But from the outset, we have been supported by and work very closely with the national department. I think given all of the histories of what other institutions may have gone through and so on. So I think upfront, SHRA would not be where it is without the department. And as a consequence also, I think from the outset, we have been very aware of our responsibilities to Parliament. And we have tried to get report rigorously on any question that has been put forward to us, because we understand that's where we get our existence from. I think that's the first side of it. Secondly, the Act, we as a council are bound to follow the Act that created us. We can't look to extend the mandate automatically. I think if we did that, you would be rolling us over the coals for doing that too. Why are you doing what you're not supposed to do? So let's also be clear about that. Secondly, even at the time when we spoke to this committee about the regulations, we made the point, and the department also agreed with that, is that we can see that the time frame when the Act came into existence, the time frame that the social institutional pilot that preceded the existence of SHRA came into existence, and where we are now, all have things that create spaces that are not perfect in terms of implementation. That's one set of things. Our predecessor, the Social Housing Foundation, had as its core business capacitation. One of the big issues around the discussions with co-ops, to come to that, is that the co-ops quite simply acknowledge that there is an issue around capacitation that they need, and they are looking to us or any other body to provide that. And as it stands, we cannot, right? Because we do not have that wherewithal. However, I want to say, so that creates a logjam. However, I want to say it's not, and if we gave that impression, I apologize sincerely. It's not that we are not mindful of co-ops or are not doing work around that. Eugene said, we have got to the point where there are now 10 applications from co-ops. In the period since the institutional subsidy came into existence, which also had to deal with co-ops, there had never been a housing co-op application except one that has been run through by, with the support of a municipal entity in the trial. Joshko was in fact the only sort of co-op that ever predated this this system. And I think that, that puts it into perspective some of the myriad of issues that actually that one has to deal with. And that is why I think we support and understand the department saying you actually need to, if you're going to address the policy and the framework, and your challenge chair is and the legislation, we actually have to make sure we are asking the questions not only of this narrow wedge where we are, but how it operates more broadly. To come to the issue about the numbers of 28,000, 27 something as opposed to 80,000, the portion of social housing that the social, that Shira is supposed to look at within that 80,000 was put at 24,000. And to that extent, the 28,000 is exceeding that. And we are mindful already that the department has supported us with getting additional funding for at least 2,500. So we couldn't leave it with clear conscience purely at the 24,000.
To supply the rest, what is expected?
This is the rest of the broader rental, and again, I refer to the kind of, we look at that area, we can only look at areas where people must pay back. We have to look at that, because that is what rental is, getting in a regular income for housing. That is how it's defined. We're responsible for a great deal of safe money that goes through that.
Sorry, Chaperson. I think we need more explanation when we meet next time, when we are dealing with the business plan. Because if Shra is to put, he contribute 24,000 out of that 80,000 from the president, State of the Nation address, Who's going to be responsible for the rest? Which means it's the department. So let's not discuss it, members. I'm only full about the report. But we'll address it. I just want to put it on record. Let's address it properly when we are dealing with the business plans in our next meeting. Continue.
Some of the balance is actually through the private sector as well. And that is part, and the way the Act is crafted and the way the Act is designed is it says that we are responsible for the investment as well as the accreditation of institutions to which the state money flows, right? But it also says that we are responsible for the way the sector operates, and to that it, and that is the reason we have in our first deal really started looking at, well, not only at China and our second allocation, but looking at private sector and then cooperatives as well. But I think the other side of it is that we are involved with the department, as Neville has said, in looking at the whole rethinking of rental policy and rental act. But strictly speaking, our mandate is very narrowly defined. I think the other side of it that I want to just touch on, and my colleagues will come in on the other issues, accreditation, when we speak about it, just speak about accreditation of social housing institutions. So it is, and to the extent that it sometimes might be a municipal social housing institution, good and well, but accreditation of the institution, and the funding flows in that are effectively, the money comes from the restructuring grant. That's the one that we're overall responsible for. Then it's got to top up by the province. And the two of those together are generally in the order of about 55 to 65% of the cost of a unit. So if a unit costs 250,000 rand, you're talking about that's probably together about 170,000, 180,000 rand, and then the rest of that money has to be got by commercial means. So it's not that Shura then goes into a relationship with any outside funders. Let me be clear. Shura doesn't go into a relationship with outside funders. But what it does do is it will discuss with the banks that they must start giving effect to their own policy. We will also make sure that, for example, there's an agreement between the Netherlands and the South African government around social housing. Not that Shura has signed, but that the national department is responsible for. So let me be clear that we don't overstep our boundaries around that. And so commercial money happens either in the name of the institution, and we do not own the institutions. They have their own risk profiles, and we assess whether the money goes into them. I think to that extent, we then, the question was asked about how rigorous is the process and the NHBRC and so on. My colleagues will speak more to that. But we have a very, because we are putting in such large amounts of money on behalf of human settlements and we are a regulator, we have a very rigorous process. And we have evaluations and reports every 3 months, and we actually walk the actual site. And we have continuous reports because we also have the ability to claw back. And that is part of the reason why there was a relationship manager position, so that is a continuous thing that we look at. The issue around the resignation of the board member, the particular person had taken a position as a DDG in one of the other government departments. We can't appoint ourselves new council members. We have raised the matter with the minister, and in fact, at one of the launches, and the minister has indicated that he would like to have a meeting with us to look at one or two additional names. So when the process happens, we actually had a brief discussion with the department now, because we weren't even sure if it has to be the whole process as it was at the beginning, or if the minister has a different way of putting on additional members, but that we can't just say, oh, we like somebody and put them on. It has to go through due process. I think with regard to the strategic objectives, I think that we are conscious that we operate as a subset of broader rental policy, but we are specifically governed by this particular act, and we're in a difficult position of having to comply, not only comply, but comply with the act, grow the sector and help contribute and monitor to things, while at the same time know that there are shortcomings and work on them. So it's not that that we're dealing with that. The issue about being a World Class organization, we're not saying we want. We're saying that we what we're aspiring to be. One of the things that irritates us, to be honest, is why must we go to other countries always to learn about best practice? Why can't other people come here? So if we set ourselves a goal that says we want to be the best we can be in social housing, why is that a bad thing to want as a goal for ourselves? That we want to be able to learn and show that South Africans are capable of doing the best we can and learning from the best and also being able to grow our own rather than have to do things elsewhere. So those are just my few responses to that. Thank you.
When is the committee ratifying the agreements that you signed, those international agreements in relation to them?
Chair, we had requested a comprehensive sort of compilation from our unit, and I'll give you a detail, but it's not only one. You remember the committee had requested all the ones, because there's a number of them, and we'll bring that as a comprehensive package.
Can you tell this? Okay. Is there any?
Well, we still have to respond. I think there were about 39 questions.
No.
Oh. Okay, we'll summarize some of the responses, Chair. But just in terms of our process for approving applications for funding, just in general, it takes about 6 weeks from application assessment and final decision on that. So we would say that within a period of 2 months, a decision will have been made. The funding flow will depend on whether the institution approved meets the requirement. And in that, we enter into an agreement which ensures the checks and balances are actually there. For accreditation, it is for the institutions themselves to prove their capacity to be accredited. It's not for us to make sure that they have the capacity. It's for them to convince us that please accredit us as a social housing institution that you can invest government money in because we have these capacities to do the work. We will talk to the NHBRC in terms of inspections. However, please, the committee can note that we have already started discussions and concluded, I think, with NHBRC around technical support because they also have technical people working with us. And the institutional capacity at provincial level, how we approach it is that we work with the provinces for them to develop particular strategies to implement their rental housing. The Western Cape has one, KZN has one. We're in the process of working with Northwest and the Eastern Cape in terms of their strategies. And those strategies take into account whatever capacities that they would have. In terms of our own organizational structure, it was just a startup structure. It was lean. Along the way, we realized that there are other areas that we did not cover and which would critically impact negatively on our performance. So we couldn't give the responsibility to existing staff members. The issue of ownership versus rental, Chairperson, is that we should then recognize the fact that the social housing is one instrument. Government and the department has other instruments that will enable people to own property and to own housing. In terms of the strategic objectives, and I think there's been a lot of discussion around the issue of cooperative housing, we will see how many of them qualify for accreditation. I think that should be the first milestone. Can we accredit one co-op as SRA? At least it's a milestone to do something. But we have 10 applications. I'm hopeful that out of the 10, a lot of them will be accredited. If they are then accredited, then they are eligible to receive even more support from government and from SRA. And I think the other points, Chairperson, have been covered by Neville and the Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and your team. We are looking forward to see those 27,000. let's get to the next presentation, which is NETA. Can you try and summarize it? Don't get into details because the time is against us, so try your best. At 1 o'clock, we have to leave this committee room. As I've mentioned, that there's quite a lot of activities here in this parliament, and they are frustrating us too.
Oh, it's on call, I'm sorry, come on, I'm sorry. Thank you. And everything right.
Good what?
Let you listen. Just get their spellings and everything right. Is it fine?
Yeah, no.
Is it? Are you sure? That's the thing. Because I always have to phone to confirm how you spell their names, and it's always a...
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's hand over to Nata.
Thank you, honorable chair and members, and my colleagues from the department, NHPRC, and SHRA. Chair, we are making a short presentation that backs the documents that have been submitted to the committee, which is the five-year strategic plan and the annual performance plan. And we are picking silent features that are giving structure to those documents that inform our business from now and onwards. Chair, firstly, just to capture the known, which is the mandate and vision and the mission. NHPRC is in the business of providing bridging finance to small, medium, and established contractors that are building moderate houses for moderate and low-income earners and related infrastructure. And our vision, we've crafted our vision to build partnerships around innovative solutions. And perhaps what best captures this umbrella is our mission, which when NHPRC initiates programs and takes considered risks to ensure sustainable flow of finance for construction of low-income and affordable housing and related infrastructure. And we do this in partnership with the role players in the human settlement sector. This is an umbrella, Chair, that is important to keep on reminding ourselves about because it is the one that gives us the parameters for innovations around the space where our mandate allows us to play, and be guided not to overstep the mark. And it's always important to restate that. When we were here, about a year ago, dealing with our performance report, the annual performance report, I think amongst other things that came out of the committee were issues of sustainability around nature. And those issues mainly were arising from the high level of provision for losses that we were seeing in our books. And this is a matter that we have dealt with the committee for the last 3 years. And we're sitting presenting this strategic plan where we have explored various avenues, and we're taking a view that says in this next 5 years we are going to be proactive about normalizing the business and its performance, but also going further to normalize the lending environment within which we work. And we would see the strategic plan as within that context of restoring sustainability within nature. One of the areas that will drive this process are the...
What you are presenting, you don't have it.
Okay, Chair. I, pardon for that, I should have indicated that there are hard copies, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
Chair, I've just added a slide. Just give a context, and I guess with the limited time, even if you were to stop me, if I would have dealt with this slide, I would have sort of given the parameters of how we are approaching the strategic plan. So the restoration of our sustainability is around intensifying the drive to recover on the delinquent loans. We've seen in the last 3 years the growth in the defaults, and we've put the various reasons of this, which are mainly about contractor failure and employer failure. And when I talk employer failure, where there are instances of poor payments to contractors that affect this flow. Going forward, we also do not retreat from the space where we are operating, but we are developing new models that will sustain our financing of contractors, and we will talk about that as we go down the presentation. And part of the work that we're doing is to also diversify the income streams, and really it's a logical area of extension because it is part of normalizing the lending and environment where we work. Then the second leg, Chair, is then ensuring that we keep on working within our mandate as well as relevance to outcome 8 developmental targets. And on this, I would talk about the gap housing category of the market, in which we are putting a lot of energies around that. And we are seeing good traction that the strategy is making around these various areas that we are intervening in. Job creation and enhancing the delivery capacity of within the human settlements sector is also an important aspect for us. We're sitting with a capacity that we've built in the last 14 years or so with systems, and it is available to the human settlement sector to be used. And we see effective use of that in various ways by departments and sister institutions. Chair, the strategic objectives are driven perhaps by 3 areas, which is about the current business development of existing lending programs to utilize the full capacity of resources that we have. And in that, there are new innovations around the contractor finance and development program that we are putting in place. Affordable housing, I've put that. And then the second area is keeping on reviewing our relevance to outcome 8 and making sure that we put in place those things that will enable us to perform in that area. Policy context is a policy context that is remaining informative to us, and I'm not going to dwell a lot in that, except that to say we're sitting in a policy context where the issues of jobs, protection and employment creation becomes important. We're sitting in an environment where we need to focus on the gap housing, the supply of services in communities and develop integrated communities, and address the issues of service delivery capacity to meet the development targets. And in the business, we are in the business that straddles the financial sector as well as the construction sector, and we are affected by variables in those two sectors. International finance constraints, we don't need to say more about that. Drying up of the type of funding and the structuring and concessionary funding that we could raise 5 or 8 years ago is no more. Unfavorable conditions locally. I think that the banks are in and out of affordable housing in terms of either advancing or retreating in advancing end user finance. And it's a space that we work on. In 1 year, you see a trend that is showing at 10 on the positive side in the market, and one variable changes in the international finance sector, and things change even locally. We are affected by that context. But also the continued poor performance of the contractors that we lend to, not more on the construction side, though there may be those challenges, but the competitive nature of that area, the fact that a number of big companies came in and are focusing now on the local construction industry, and the competitiveness around that area is forcing contractors to sometimes tender on margins that are not sustainable in the construction industry just to survive in the business. And it is easy for them to dip on the side of failure when things don't go well. If you put that together with the poor performance that you sometimes experience with employers, then it is easy when things go wrong for all those elements to lead to defaults by contractors on the loans that we give to contractors. But they are good news as well, Chair. We will be talking and illustrating that we have been capitalized by the department for 3 years, starting 2011-2012, 300 million over the 3 years. The 100 million has been received already. That is good news that has allowed Nature to also take a bolder step towards innovation in raising funds and a number of other things. We are noticing the low volume in the traditional business because also of the restructuring in how we do business that we're going through. And I think that we're starting to see good news coming out of that. But we are also using our capacity, competencies, leadership, and systems to support where we see glaring gaps that affect the lending or the performance in the delivery of services. Here we just highlight we are also in the process which will be finalizing within the period of the strategic plan, which is the DFI consolidation. We're just flagging it. Sometimes it affects how we do business, particularly when we do the structuring of long-term finance with partners. But it's an area that is manageable, particularly with the support of the department. Chair, just to highlight on the affordable housing, I've talked about the 300 million, the capitalization, and the 100 million was paid over in the last financial year. What is of note in this slide is that 100 million has enabled us to structure two partnerships, one with CADIS, which is a asset management company, as well as with PIC. So we've raised in partnership 175 million over and above the 100 million to increase the capacity, the funding capacity that we have to finance affordable housing. And therefore, in the period of the strategic plan, we see in the next 3 years some level of comfort in terms of funding of affordable housing. We are striving to get into the gap housing market. And I highlight three areas there just to illustrate also the integrated nature in which we have to approach the outcome 8 targets. When we look at gap housing from a supply side financing, we look at mainly three things, and they affect the price. We look at location. Location becomes important because if you've got the right location, the demand and uptake of those houses is good, and the chances of default are low. That is location, infrastructure, and all those aspects. We look at bulk services, bulk infrastructure, and the projects that are able to get within the bulk, within the gap market target, are those projects where there has been a good collaboration between the private sector and the public sector, where the developers do not have to invest on the bulk infrastructure, because once they invest on the bulk infrastructure, it has to be factored in the price, and therefore you struggle to come within, say, under 380,000 and lower in the market. And then the third factor becomes the price of land, which sometimes is a where there are developers that have been doing some land banking. They bought land in good prices, and you are able to develop a site and services within 100,000 price for a service site. Then you are on your way to being able to price for the gap market. And I think that, Chair, the point that I'm making is that with the instruments that have been developed with the leadership of the department, is that we've got now FLISP, we've got an HDA working around issues of land. You're seeing a good opportunity for the public sector to give a leadership role in facilitating the housing, particularly affordable housing, and where it is located. And therefore, you're likely to open a number of opportunities with that leadership of the public sector, because the development of gap houses or affordable housing is not by chance or led by developers who happen to have locations that are determined by where they own assets. And I think that it is a welcome opportunity, and with interaction with various institutions within the human settlement sector, we can achieve more around this area, because the key thing on the gap housing is about the price. We're looking at conservatively producing about 18,000 in the next financial year, and I say conservatively because what I've said about the collaborations between the various entities can open bigger opportunities to deliver on this matter if we are able to proactively get the land, which is the work that HDA is doing, to get the land that is well located. And collaboration around funding of bulk infrastructure and do long-term planning to release big pieces of land that can be provided properly for future infrastructure. And we all would be on our way to deliver on the gap housing.
That's correct. Your last, you say in the next 5 years instead of next financial year. So can you correct that?
Next 5 years.
Next 5 years.
Yeah.
What's your financial year? Yeah.
Oh, did I say financial year? Sorry. Sorry, Chair. The what is on the slide is correct. Okay. The new lending model on the contractors in the infrastructure, I will touch on first of all, we... Okay.
At least, and it is Nyanyameza, the first page, but as you carry on now, there's quite a lot that is new.
It's not yet. Our apologies, Chair. This will be the only departure from the... But it is...
No. We can't let you do that. You know? We need to be consistent. I think what am I going to say? Experience, first experience in this committee. he tried to present something that we do not have, and we requested him to say, no, can we shift this? Because we can't relate, because now this is your document, you don't have at our disposal. Shall we agree with this information? It must, you know, there are so many new pages that we have, I mean, we have gone so far with something new. So can we agree, committee members, that at least we request them that on the first meeting, Mr. Mgumisa, in our first meeting, they should come and make a presentation. Very Tlangani Silicon, they consolidated all this information into one package. Because now you are giving us something you don't have. Honourable members? Honourable?
Yeah. Chair, I think they should understand that we need to own up to this information that you are giving us. And we got to make informed decisions based on what you say. So I cannot stand, you know, in Parliament for you while I don't have the necessary figures. If they ask me what we allowed you for that small slide because we thought you were just speaking to it, it's fine, you can relate. Now we're seeing you bringing, and you're bringing up figures there that we need to interrogate. Now we don't have them here. You're giving us a dilemma, and you are doing well in your presentation. I don't know what happened.
Thank you, Tepesi. Are we saying when we come back, the first meeting will be there?
My mind was just working to say on Friday we still meet with other institutions. Why can't we just finish? Because our intention, Mama, is to finish all these institutions because we don't know what is going to happen. Because immediately when we come back, there are these public hearings.
Yes, yeah.
So please, because we can't carry on like this now. I want to It's something that we don't have in our presentation. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is simply what we have. No,
shall we start so that no one so was up for my Jefferson, you are welcome with your team.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We in fact the process what we are undertaking is to listen to your presentation on your strategic plan for 2012-13, but we understand that you have undergone so many activities in ensuring that you restart and organize the institution, and I think we as the committee we appreciate that, but because of time constraints, we would like you to just summarize the other areas. Don't get into deep details. And I think it's a problem, the parliamentary program, because we need sometimes extra time with one institution, not cladding all the institutions on in the same time. I don't think we are doing justice, but we have to understand that sometimes planning, it causes a lengthy. Is. But at the same time, we will still need to engage more especially with NHBRC and these institutions that have been capitalized. We need more time. So we'll request you just to summarize everything, and then the officials will get into details of the state plan of this current. So that is what we're going to oversee you. In terms of your performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, honorable members. What we will do straight in the interest of time, I will ask the acting chief executive to go straight to the presentation so that if we still have time for any questions, we can pick up those questions and then I can come in later. There should be two documents. One is the elaborate strat plan, and we would like to note that. Yes, but there's another document, which is the actual presentation itself. I've asked Dr. Mahatir to do the very, very, very summarized version, and then Mr. Courtney Thorp, the CFO, to talk on the numbers briefly, hoping that we'll be able to pick up any questions and clarify things. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Our strategic plan is actually based on the current Housing Consumers Protection Measures Act, and if I need to actually highlight a few critical issues, and I'm going to skip a few slides but focus on the key issues with regards to the strategic corporate plan. But our vision really is to become a world-class home builders warranty organization which supports the delivery of sustainable quality homes. In line with this, our mission really is in two parts. One critical aspect is for us to actually protect the housing consumer, and that's where the focus is really on. Protection of the housing consumer. And the second part of the leg of our mandate is actually to regulate the home building industry. And that we're going to do it through promoting innovative home building technologies, through setting of home building standards, and improving the capabilities of home builders. And it is actually the last part which we are also going to focus on, which is actually improving the capabilities of home builders through training, through providing them with the necessary services so that they can actually grow as emerging home builders. Our strategy and the strategic intent, as contemplated in our vision, the mission remains the same. And the critical aspect is for us to improve our visibility and accessibility to the marketplace. Right? We would want actually to enhance that visibility, and we know that there's been a number of concerns with regards to the visibility and accessibility of the NHPRC. We have actually appointed a new person in our organization who is with us today, manager responsible for stakeholder liaison and marketing and communications. So we actually anticipate then that going forward we should be in a position to improve our visibility and accessibility. We are also in the process of establishing a call center, and we believe then that through this call center we should be able to actually reduce the number of complaints or be able to actually provide our services within the acceptable turnaround times. We also, as a part of our strategy, is actually to position ourselves as a leader in the knowledge creation. And it is through this that we anticipate that we should be in a position to provide all technical and technological building solutions through not only ourselves as NHPRC, but strategic partnerships with other industry captains, such as your CSIR, partnerships with organizations such as the Cement and Concrete Manufacturers Associations, the Council for Geosciences, so that we'll be in a position to actually provide that leadership necessary for the home building industry. And we also believe then that we need to provide diversified services and products so to align ourselves with the changing building requirements and the needs. Our key products, to summarize, what do we offer as NHPRC? Essentially, every new house must be enrolled with the NHPRC. It is a requirement in terms of the Act. Every home builder, whether the home builder is involved in additions, alterations, or building new houses, every home builder must be registered with the NHPRC. Right? We are involved in the inspection of those houses. Every house must be inspected by the NHPRC. Right? So every house that is enrolled by the NHPRC must be inspected. The fourth bullet, which I also highlighted in terms of our vision and our mission, is the home builder training and development, and we actually want to support all the emerging home builders to ensure then that they have the capabilities and the capacities to be able to deliver quality products. Litigation and legal advisory services in order to enhance our enforcement capabilities, and we are also saying that moving forward, what we need to provide are geotechnical and materials engineering services. We believe then that most of the municipalities and the provinces, they do not have the professional capabilities to actually do the geotechnical investigations. And we are not saying that as NHPRC would do this, but we can actually help in the project management and assisting the departments to do the geotechnical investigations, so that at least that would reduce also the turnaround times in terms of approving the projects for enrollment. In terms of governance, in order for us to establish proper accountability and transparency, the Council has established a number of committees, and those committees are actually highlighted there. I will not go into the details of those committees, but some of the critical committees, like the Industry Advisory Committee, will ensure then that what we are doing is aligned to what the industry expectations. So this is a channel of communication between NHPRC and the industry. And we also have other committees there which would also relate to governance issues around audit and risk management. In terms of our strategic objectives, I highlight the strategic objectives to grow and protect our warranty fund, providing up the innovative quality products, particularly those products that will actually and services that will delight our customers. Importantly is also what we envisage is to strengthen our operating systems, procedures, and processes. And it is through this then that we have also said we have relooked at our organization, we have relooked at our processes and systems, and we have said our systems are not really adequate. project, they are not really addressing some of the critical issues that we need to deal with. And we have actually now reviewed our enterprise resource planning system that we currently have, and we would want to revamp that system so as to provide world-class, you know, IT systems. Also, we need to create a learning environment and capacities to improve on our products and services. In terms of our short plan to actually highlight what is it that we are going to do in the short term, the critical aspect is that we need to enhance the regulatory function of the NHBRC. As I mentioned earlier on, the two issues, we need to protect the housing consumer and we need to regulate the home building, regulate the home building industry. And it is through this regulatory function that the NHBRC now has established two critical divisions in the organization. One of the divisions is actually the enforcement and compliance division, to ensure then that every single house that is built has to be enrolled and every builder must be registered. And any builder that does not comply to the technical requirements must be prosecuted. So we've actually enhanced that division, and you will see in terms of our budget then that we have actually moved in more detail in terms of ensuring then that this division plays a critical role in the regulatory functions of the NHBRC. And another division that we've looked at is actually establishment of the quality assurance division of the NHBRC. The quality assurance division is actually specifically going to look more into the core business of the NHBRC, which is also compliance in terms of ensuring that every single house is inspected. So that quality assurance division is a responsibility. In the short term, what we've looked at is actually to outsource, to have a hybrid model of our inspection function, where we outsource certain provinces, and in some provinces where the volumes are very low, we are actually doing the inspections in-house. But it is through this division then that is going to ensure then that all the single houses, all houses are enrolled, and to ensure then that everything that needs to be done from a quality assurance point of view, our strategic partnerships with the municipalities, we are also trying to see how best can we play a role in establishing good partnerships with the municipalities so that all the houses are enrolled. So those two critical divisions are going to play a major role in the NHBRC. But in order for us to enhance our enforcement and compliance, we also need to actually review the current Act and the regulations, because then the current Act and regulations does not really give us the necessary teeth for us to comply, to ensure that there's compliance in the industry. So one of the critical areas to ensure this compliance is actually the review of the current Act and the regulations. On a short-term plan that we need to look at is actually transforming the organization into a viable and modern organization, looking more into issues of enhancing our corporate governance and risk management profile. But I've also mentioned earlier on then that we need to actually review and ensure then that we are aligned with world-class processes and systems with a strong and reliable IT platform system. So we are now moving away from our existing IT system and would want to actually put on a system that will enhance our processes and procedures. The third thing in terms of our plans, short-term, we want to drive the growth and development of NHBRC to be relevant and support the initiatives of government. And I quote here the President's speech of the 22nd of April, where he says, quote, "We are upgrading formal settlements in municipalities to provide security in the next 5 years." And our role as NHBRC, we are now saying, what is our role in terms of ensuring these informal settlements, like upgrading of informal settlements? We are there, we can look at the geotechnical services, we are there, we can look at the top structures, alternative building methods that can actually enhance and improve on these informal settlements. In the medium-term plans, we need to establish a partnerships, as I said, with the other role players. We need to relook at our inspection models. Is it best for us to outsource, insource the hybrid model that we are currently looking at? We need to work with municipalities. We need to look at the best inspection model for that. Recommend the review of the legislative act and the regulations. We have got our training center, which is called the Eric Malobi Training Center. We need to look at the accreditation of that center so that at least currently in South Africa, there is no qualification called inspector qualification. And the NHBRC is actually taking a lead to ensure that we have a CETA-accredited inspector training module. And we would want to have that accredited by CETA so that every inspector must have a formal qualification through the Eric Malobi Training Center. Sustaining our warranty funds. And when we improve our systems, improve our processes and procedures, we aim to actually score a level 4 on the capability maturity model. Our contribution to the national outcomes, right, what is highlighted there, I would want to summarize it in only 3 words. Our expectancy, we need to ensure compliance to norms, standards, and quality within the sector. Our contribution to the national outcomes is to ensure then that every house must comply to the national norms, standards, and quality. We need to improve the skills, and we need to actually support the government in terms of capacity. Right? We will be in a position, and we will say that we have already started with a number of provinces. We want to ensure then that some of our inspectors, some of our quality assurance staff, they actually operate from the provincial departments of human settlements offices and the municipalities. So we are busy putting our staff members now to operate from municipalities and to operate from the departments, so as to ensure compliance to norms and standards. Chairperson, I think I've actually highlighted some of those issues, and what I would want us to do is to actually ask the CFO to take us through some critical aspects from the budget point of view.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the budget period that is discussed is basically where it goes through the actual general assumptions, and they basically, and then the consumer price inflation, but assumptions. Let me have to say that over the last year, the residential home building market, still remains under pressure. And because the NHBRC is looking to enroll new homes, with interest rate fluctuations, it's impacting on housing consumers' ability to service their existing mortgage bonds. We find the existing houses out there are cheaper than a new house. It's easier to go and buy, you want to call it a second house, a new house. The National Credit Act has actually come in, and that has put a lot of consumers under pressure in order to get bonds or to service their bonds. So when we look at the NHBRC part, we look at the subsidy market. We basically did our budget in line with the Department of Human Settlements Housing Construction Plan, and that's where we actually got our figures. And we also budget for our a rectification program in the KZN of Eastern Cape. And that's not rectification, that is the assessment of units that should be rectified. Right, our CPI assumptions is that our late enrollments we have decreased over the 5-year term. The idea is to have no late enrollments to get everybody but to enroll on time. And we've aligned all our potential increases with the government guidelines. Our revenue for the non-subsidy sector, we are finding generally through StatsSA that the market is moving towards smaller units. We are building more and more smaller units. So those big houses, yes, they are there, but you find that the houses' growth generally is 4.3% in the smaller floor plans. The NHBRC starts to show that 58% of the growth is in the affordable category of under 500,000 per home. 30% growth is in the category 500,000 to 2 million. And we have a negative growth of 13% in the category 2 to 5 million. So they're not building those big houses anymore. The luxury end, over 5 million, appears to be constant. If you've got money, you've got money and you bought the house. So our budget is based on those kind of percentages in the types of enrollments that we will be looking at in the forthcoming year. The running assumption is the committee is aware that we have been deregistered for VAT by SARS, which actually means that our basic costs will go up by 14%. So the committee will see some marked movement in a lot of our fixed expenses from one year to the other. And to do a percentage change is basically going to be the extra 14% we have to now absorb. Effectively, in our income side as well, our fee included the 14%. So we're not going to have a movement in our income, but we are going to have a movement in our expenditure. Madam Manager, to you quite quickly, these are the standard revenue assumptions that are in the regulations, I think, that the committee is aware of them. We have a standard regulated registration fee, annual fee, and we have a standard fee for the bulletin, the manual. In the enrollment fee structure, it's on a sliding scale, from 0 to 500,000 at 1.3%, including that. Remember now that that comes out, and it slides right up to houses in excess of 5 million to a maximum fee of 34,000 rand. If we look at the trends now to see what we actually did, this is the real, maybe the most important slide. The rest are just are going to be details of this. The registration of new home builders, those are the people we believe that will come into the market. In the actual figures for 2010-11 was 3,680. Our budget this year was 3,337, and we're budgeting a figure next year of 3,335. These are new builders coming in. What we're finding a big problem in this area is the builders' actual credit profile. A sector of the listing builders because they're not complying with the laws. We find the only place where we haven't had a lot of CIPRO delistings is in the Western Province. Otherwise, everywhere else they are delisting the closed corporations. We find that the people's housing crisis in the Western Cape is going to be one of the major areas that is going to bring new builders into the market. So if you look at the rand value, it goes from 5.4 million actual achieved in the last audit. This year's budget is 4.3, and we are projecting 4.8 million in the next budget cycle. Renewals, that figure represents the actual home builders that are on our database, who actually renew every year. So in 2010-11, we had 11,115 builders actively on our database. We budgeted this year for 12,000, and looking at the profile, especially with the credit profiles of some of the builders who do not qualify for the built houses, or they have gone insolvent, and this at the CIPRO listings, we are projecting the builders on our current database to remain at 11,431. So effectively, we're saying builders in our market will be the 11,431 plus the 3,335 above. All right, the enrollment value in units, 29 million. Actual budget this year, 33. We're still projecting a 33,913, but basically the biggest growth is in the under 500,000 rand market. In rand figures, that takes us to a figure of 246 actually achieved in the last financial year audited, but a 264, and this is going to give us 301.2 million going forward. The average enrollment fee we found at the moment is 8,418 actual. This year it came down to 7,964, and we're projecting the fee to be 8,881 in the next budget cycle. Let's go off and look at spend time, madam. If you look at this going through, it just shows that registrations and renewal fees are very constant because that is your database of actual builders that are actually renewing every year, and it's only about 600 rand a year. The non-subsidy enrollment fees you find has gone up from 246 actual, 264 I went, and 300, and you see we are going for a general trend. Most of the markets going for 4 years or 5 years, they really can't predict where the housing market will be in 5 years' time, what has happened to the economy, where the inflation be held and the thing. So we have used a generic growth based on the EPSA and the Department of Statistics. We have got ideas from them, and those are the figures we've used in this four projection. That's our base. And then the technical and late enrollments, I think you'll notice that in the 2012-13 year, there is a 50 million. That is the forensic audits that we have been doing for the Eastern Cape, and we have assumed that that will continue over the next cycle. The subsidy, I think the committee is aware, we charge 1% for project enrollment and 0.75 for home enrollment fee. And then for brownfields, of the service installation, we charge, that is where there is a service installation where we cannot see it, we charge 2.01%. If we look at the trend, you will see on the graph is probably better, but I think the important part is that the subsidy project enrollments, we're looking at 66,700 units, 57.5 million. The subsidy home enrollments, we're looking at 181,783, and we're looking at the generation of income 108.5. Rather go to the graph, put in the next one. You find the red and the blue. If we look at it, generally it is climbing as we are taking on more and more of the subsidy work. You can see that the figures are going to climb up to the 200 million mark. But because of planning, I mean, we have the municipalities and everybody has a plan to do project enrollments and home enrollments. You find that the blue will be a bit higher or the red will be a bit higher. The blue will be a bit higher and the red will be a bit higher. But overall, government is meeting its targets, or we are getting aligned with the targets, ensuring that these homes are being enrolled. I think it's just that the mix of the red and the blue has got importance. It's important that the totals are being enrolled. Going on to the revenue trend, it's just a trend again. You can look at the revenue fees line. It's constant, as I explained. It's general fees. The non-subsidy enrollments have come to the 301. We are seeing an increase in the market, but in the smaller houses, which actually means that we're getting a smaller fee. Subsidy enrollment fees, there's a generic climb over the next five-year period. Technical, I've been through that, and the investment income, due to the, that has been great. The only problem is that with the bond markets, with Greece, with all these things over here, with the reduction in the prime rate, it's going to be, and we have a very conservative investment policy to sustain, but the warranty fund, we are not looking for big growth, they were just looking for sustainability. The expenditure patterns, madam, we're looking at the 14% increase, so there's a very major increase on year, that's mainly explained by the extra VAT. I've explained the hybrid, Dr. Jeff spoke about the hybrid model, which has been implemented. He spoke about the enforcement of the legal division. We have budgeted for that totally, and the project management office, which we have budgeted for. If we look at the inspections that we are doing, what we have decided to do is take our internal inspectors from 69 people to 157 plus a PDA specialist. Those 157 plus a PDA specialist are the core inspectors employed by the NHBRC to do inspections according to the ratios that are required. In the event that we, for some planning, we need to outsource. That's when we talk about the hybrid, and then we bring in special resources to ensure that the inspection, either the subsidy or the non-subsidy market, is the people are employed. So the extra cost you see in the payroll line has gone up 58 million, bringing in those 88 inspectors, plus the 8 PDA specialists, and the extra cost in NHBRC this year is 58 million, and the staff cost of 4.5. This graph is, I'm going to skip this one, it's just basically showing how we split. The most important part at the top, outsourced is 40, if you see, and the non-subsidy, and 58. It's just to try and show that if we were to do all the units that did come in, and we got our figures spot on, we would have to outsource the 40 and the 58 in order to meet the criteria based on the 157 people. But that is a moving target based on the number of people coming. But that is what we have got lined up, and we have put contracts in place for, so that we do inspect every house. Madam, on the inspection side, I think on the fixed expenditure side, I think on the graph, in terms of time, I think on the phone, if you look at all the figures, they're basically going up. They have reduced over the years. We have maintained costs. They are going up in most cases below the CPI. But remember, they're also going up if you look at the administrative service and fixed costs. And you see how they're going up 13, 14, 15, where they were. Remember, they're absorbing an extra 14% there. So we've done, if you take 14% onto the 57 to the 56, you see that we have actually brought in serious savings to ensure that we have optimized our business. not that we are not going to deliver. It's just that we have managed just to make sure that we've signed the right leases and gone into the right contracts. You'll notice on the parallel line, 155 on the left-hand side to 167 to 257, that big jump, and that is basically a re-emphasis of the inspection people that we have employed. Madam, these are just the details, which I won't go through. They are in the packs. If any member wants to actually ask any questions on any specific line, we will then be able to address those. If we look at our status of financial position, which is our balance sheet, we're looking at a return on investment around 6%. Trade debtors and our creditors we pay and receive at about 45 days. Big notice on our financials, there's no more VAT liability. And then the technical liabilities are held constant, because, madam, that is the actual adjustment that we make every single year. In the new system, in the ERP system, we are hoping to do that on a monthly or a quarterly basis. It'll help us a lot to put up what our actual premium earned is and premium return. The big issues on the budget, the biggest one is the ERP, which the CEO discussed, an extra $42 million for this next financial year and $53 million in the year thereafter. No depreciation has been provided in that budget period, as we will only start depreciating with the asset once we go live. Total capital expenditure requested is $64.5 million, with the software being the computer, the $43.7 million being the highest expenditure for the next budget cycle. Madam, those are the financial position, a budgeted statement of financial position. I'm not going to go into detail. I'll pick up specific questions on those. The maturity framework, ma'am, we have to do this in terms of the regulations. This is the assumptions and the workings, but the bottom line is, on the right-hand side, the statement of financial performance on maturity is $6.4 million, and the statement of financial position is 2.5. Those materialities basically mean that our books will, our annual financial statements will, with an error of that size, will not be but reliable and be very close to the AG's materiality limited used in the audit for the NHBRC. Madam, something above that, even though we have those but materialities, the biggest part is all our budgets and our actuals every single month, we will expand all variances of 10% or 20,000, whichever is the higher. So if flowers is up by 400% and the value is of no consequence, we will not, but we do manage our fixed costs to ensure that we are getting, we are spending our money efficiently, and that is seen in the budget. Thank you, madam.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the team. Members, can you just put the mic on?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to ask just a couple of questions to the NHBRC. I think we have to agree that in terms of quality housing, you are doing very badly there. We still have got shoddy work in this PNH, and poor workmanship is still ongoing and continuing. Actually, there is this big rectification project that the minister has spoke about, and it's because of poor workmanship. And I frankly don't see how you are turning around. I see you have said you're going to have quality assurance division. I certainly hope that it does its job quite properly to ensure that we have quality houses. I see you as an institution that chases quantity. You chase numbers on how many you register, you know, rather than saying how do you make sure that those that you register build quality houses. You are doing very badly in home building inspections. Why do we still continue to have this shoddy work? And what are you doing about it? And frankly, I don't see you turning around the situation. And definitely the issue for me with NHBRC is the issue of quality housing. We don't see quality housing. And secondly, the issue of the alternative building technologies. I don't see you coming up strong to sensitize South Africans and contractors to understand the value of alternative building technologies in terms of making sure that we fast-track delivery of housing and as well as ensuring that we sustain the quality thereof. The last one would be to the chairperson directly. Chair, I see you have brought an acting CEO. That means he's an actor. Where is the actual actor? What's the status quo when it comes to the CEO? So just brief us on what is happening there with the CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Taking from what Honorable Makalaba is saying, but what I've seen here is that quality is their priority. I don't know after the question that has been raised whether it's still quality is your priority. I've heard that the home builders have to register with NHBRC. Maybe all along they haven't been registered with NHBRC. You also talk about the creating learning environment and build a capacity to improve. Are you also having maybe batteries, or it's just a matter of improving inside, just inside? You're improving just your people. How long do you think what the president has said, what you have quoted for us, how long do you think this upgrading of the informal segment in municipalities is going to take? It mustn't take up to the whole of this five years that we are talking about. The CEO, I was going to ask the question anyway. My colleague has also asked. If I understood very well, talking about the second house, the second hand house is cheaper than the new one. I think what I know is that second hand house, it's been there. The value has been increasing. How does it happen that it's cheaper now? Let me put the question. Thank you.
I think in your first introduction, I wish to comment the NHBRC. Because you have indicated, I think the department now will understand what we were talking about, Kushra. We really needed a commitment to this and ensuring that you have already identified the gaps. In fact, this is not a new thing. We have been talking about the gaps. But here, you strongly emphasize that there is a need for review of the legislation and the regulations. So that is what was lacking. I think you understood as a level, the point of departure as the committee. We needed that commitment. So here we are finding that there is that commitment. We know that you have identified. We are very much aware that you have done so as a department. But we needed to show that it should be on the record that you are committed to ensure that you have to follow up these processes. But what is the interesting? In the first presentation, there was the last one. I mean, the last before this one. There was a talk of the employer, of which the employer is government. I want to relate that one to this one of the NHPRC. Class short-term plan, where we are saying you want to enhance the regulatory function of the council by establishing an enforcement and a compliance division. Who does not comply? It's the employer who's not complying in most cases. I'm just complicating it worse. It's the employer. Now, we are utumu who employer wako, trying to comply. Nina, you are there, nibewe umthetho. The employer, I comply. So it means the provinces are not enrolling projects. It's not your fault. It's your employer. The problem there is a complicated nabu. But how do you resolve this matter? Yes, I understand you sit in minutes, but nothing is happening. Provinces are not enrolling projects. They are not. Even the PhD is it my enroller. I enroll. So it's the employer now. So how do you make sure that at least that relationship between yourself and the department, it might be your cozy relationship. It may be a relationship of purpose. They change them. How do you ensure that? Then, since the queen, I want to comment the turnaround strategy on the IT, because that is the problem we have been discussing that long time ago. So if there's something that is happening, I think when we meet, we will have more information about it. I'm interested on this CETA accreditation of Eric Molloy. I think we need more information about this, but not today, because it can take us more time. And then the last one, I want to check in your assessment in KZN and Eastern Cape, how many units that have to be rectified as a result of NHPRC, I wouldn't like to say negligence, but oversight. Not the oversight of monitoring. I mean, it's synonym, the oversight. I'm raising this. When we were in KZN, there were units last year, hectares were created within 6 months, of which we believe that by then, NHPRC would have played a role. But we want to check generally. The corner is in any library to rectify and pay for them. Or it says this is it to Tina government. The issue of outsourcing, we understand this is too much. But the outsourcing, is it aligned with the... Because what is important, when you outsource, you need to get the expertise. You cannot just outsource. And how is it aligned with the municipal inspection processes? Do you utilize that resource
or maybe utilize it in terms of making sure that you capacitate them when they have to implement this. So I want to check that alignment or that relationship. Thank you.
Can I first ask that Dr. Mahesh will deal with operational matters, and then I'll come to the governance-related issues.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Let me start off with the first question of quality houses, that they are really bad. I think it is an acknowledged fact that the number of houses have been built poorly. But I think the chairperson has also highlighted part of the answer to that question, because most of those houses were not actually enrolled by the NHPRC. Right? Most of those houses are actually either PHP houses or rural housing projects, and they were not enrolled as such. So what we have now done, and we've made a submission to the department, that we now need to enroll and ensure then that every single house, be it a PHP or rural house, must be enrolled, and you must inspect those houses. Yes, we probably have challenges in terms of ensuring then that every single house in the rural areas is inspected, but that's why we said now we need to relook at our inspection model so that we'll be in a position to ensure that we do reach out to every single house, whether it's in rural, it's in the urban areas, PHP or whatever. We need to ensure that. But most of those houses have not been enrolled with the NHPRC. Then what we have also done, and I'm trying to touch with what the chairperson has also said here, is then that when I said we are now in the process of placing our quality assurance staff so that they operate from the province's offices. And in those offices, they will be able to deal with the planning officials. They would know which projects have been budgeted for in this financial year, when are they starting construction. The sign-off of the inspection will be done by our quality assurance staff member. So before a contractor, for example, is paid, our quality assurance staff member would sign off to say, NHPRC, we have inspected these houses. Because we have inspected these houses, pay this contractor. So we are there in the call phase. So we then be a person to go to the department and say, but why did you pay this contractor when you did not have a sign off by the NHPRC? So we are now trying to link and say, now let's operate not from our offices, let's operate from the municipal offices, let's operate from the provincial department's offices, and we sign off for work done there. So the quality assurance staff member would be able to come back to NHPRC and say, there are 1,000 units being built in this area, I need to have 5 inspectors in this area here. And then we immediately resource and provide the inspectors relevant for that particular area. So we are now trying to synchronize now the municipal activities, the province activities, and our activities, and to become one. So now it also talks to the municipal inspectors. They have a certain role in terms of what they do, the inspections. But we are now saying our inspectors, together with the municipal inspectors, we should be able to go together and do the inspection. They check for certain aspects, we check for our risk management aspects, and together come up with the report, and we sign off that this house complies to the relevant national norms and standards, and payment then is done. Final unit inspection, when the house is complete, both NHPRC and municipal inspectors must sign off saying that this unit here has been inspected, it does comply to the standards, and then we make the payment. It's going to be a change, but that's what we are now putting on the table. See, we have started it off, we are want to pilot it in KZN, we are actually doing it there, and we'll be able to see how it progresses with time. Right? Then with regards to the alternative building technologies again, right? We are not really construction companies, so we cannot really say the department or the municipality, please use so many roads. But what we have done in terms of promoting alternative building technologies, we've run a number of show competitions in terms of the use of innovative technologies. Here in Cape Town, we have two. So the legacy project that we did last year and another project that we did one is in Blue Downs and the other one was in Drakensberg municipality in promoting innovative technologies. In Pretoria, Social Groove, we did also one. What we are now doing with KZN now they've said now they want to put a certain percentage of their developments for the use of alternative building technologies. And we are actually helping them, we are sitting with them, assisting them from a technical point of view on
the best technologies to use, how to implement that. So within the next few months, we'll be in a position to actually report the use of alternative technologies on a wider scale in KZN. In Eastern Cape, they are also starting on innovative technologies. They are actually wanting to focus more on the rural innovative technologies, and we'll be assisting them in that process there. So from our point of view, although we're not construction, we are actually trying to say now we can assist the provinces, we can assist the municipalities in the rollout of innovative building technologies. Then in terms of, I think you said quality is our priority, how many are we, bed size are we? I think plus minus per year, we are actually providing bed size of the order of about 60, is it so? About 60, internal and external bed size that we actually provide in the built environment. So some of our engineers, some of our construction management, quantity surveyors, we do provide bed size to that order of magnitude. And then, in terms of informal settlements, should you say how long is it going to take? Again, we cannot control it as NHPRC. We are not, again, construction companies. But we will be there to support, to give the department the relevant support that is required. We can promote the alternative technologies, but to what extent, we'll just be able to provide them with the necessary standards. If they want to engage us as a partner, we can do so, but we cannot play the role of being a construction company. So I cannot be in a position to answer how long is that going to take place. I don't think that is within our mandate to be able to do, but we'll be able to provide the relevant support where it's required from the NHPRC perspective. I think, Madam Chair, you said FIT accreditation, we'll give you that information. Then assessments, in KZN and in Eastern Cape, the houses that have been built and not enrolled by the NHPRC, right? Those are the houses that we're actually assessing. But right now, I cannot really give the exact statistics of how many houses have been built enrolled by the NHPRC, and that requires education. I don't think I'll be able to give that figure of it, if there is any. So we'll be in a position to do that in the future. Yeah. And then, to that. I think outsourcing and alignment with municipal inspection process, I think I did highlight then that we're going to do that. Then I think maybe Courtney wants to talk about your second house, cheaper land.
What happens is, like 10 years ago, you bought a stand at 50,000 rand, and you bought your house for, say, 100,000 rand, 150,000 rand as a 3-bedroom house. But over the years, what happens is inflation goes up, and then to pull the same house today, that stand is not now 50,000, it's now 400,000 or 500,000. It's your first problem. And secondly, your building costs, your materials, your labor costs, all that has just gone up. So now one would expect the existing house to actually have grown at the inflation, at the building cost, to be equal to a new home. So the advantage is you've got this 18% differential, because what has happened is that the existing home market is overflooded for many reasons. One, people can't get their price. People have to drop their prices because they're in financial trouble. And therefore, you get this whole flood coming onto the market where you know that South Africans have spent so much they cannot afford the mortgage bonds. So banks are repossessing. So you get all this extra stock sitting in the market. Relatively, yes, when you bought a house, you should get this up. Maybe pay a bit of a premium for a new house because it's new. But unfortunately, with the repositions we've gone through, with the Credit Act coming through, with all these kind of restrictions placed on South Africans by the bank institution, a lot of South Africans are under financial pressure. And they're actually selling below, they can't get their prices. So if the brokers say, here's a house, man, I want 500,000 for it. But if I can only get 300 for it, that's all I need, I have to pay my bond, I'm in trouble. But there is this problem at the moment. That is your major reason.
All right. Madam Chair and honourable members, I will just touch on three things. Firstly is to talk about the registration of home builders. It is indeed our mandate to do that. But what we have also discovered in terms of our own internal processes, some weaknesses, whereby this kind of thing was decentralized to provinces. And that's where we've picked up a lot of corruption there. That the builder you think that is suspended on your manual system or on your electronic system, but he has been reinstated in another system. So what we have done, we have firstly centralized all that, took all that power of suspending and uplifting suspension to head office. But that becomes the responsibility of head office to make that decision. In that way, we will try and control this floodgate, which was making sure that, including either the builder can build, has got a right to build or not. I mean, if you read newspapers today, there's a classic case there, that somebody who claims that he's registered with NHPRC. But when you look into that, you'll find that you're not sure if that person is registered even currently. So those kind of things, we're trying to close that gap. That centralization has already taken place to tighten our registration of builders. Secondly, Madam Chairperson, you made a very, very important point. The point of enforcement and compliance division in relation to our owners. You call it our employers. The government owns. We're owned by government. And our own owners are going against us. It becomes a real, real challenge. A real, real, real challenge. But what we are doing, firstly, I must commend the minister for giving us an open invitation to be part of his important meetings, like the MINTOP and also the MINMEC. The value of that, firstly, is to build a relationship with the key stakeholders in the provinces, MECs and heads of departments, so that we can build a relationship and get to know one another and talk about these things and find common solutions on it. For us, that's a very valuable initiative. But secondly, as you've heard earlier on, in NHPRC, we have appointed a person specially to concentrate on stakeholder relationship. There's a lady sitting there. That is a lady. We have elevated that appointment in the office of the CEO. One of the reasons is to ensure that there is this vibrant relationship going on, but not only that, but to get to understand what is the planning of housing projects in those particular provinces. We're studying the province at the moment, so that we can be able to understand. When we sit in UNEC and we listen to the provinces, HODs, giving us what their plans are, we take those things serious. Because for us, that is an ability for us to follow that up. You said you're going to build so many houses. We want to make sure that other houses have been built or not. If they've been built, they've been enrolled and all that. Earlier this week, or end of last week, we were in Mpumalanga, where the minister was opening about 500 houses. The first question I asked when I arrived on that site, are all these houses enrolled with us? And I asked that in a circle. And the answer was, yes, they are. Because I said, if they are not, they're going to demolish all of them. And so it's a serious matter. We're not taking it lightly, that relationship. So we are trying by all means. The time is passing us of keeping dreaming the past. We're here now, let us be seen to be visible and doing these things. Part of increasing from 69 to 157 and spending more than 50 million rand is that it is exactly to ensure that quality is taken care of as far as the houses are concerned. So the stakeholder management, it is a very key important thing, but part of that is to educate the public. The public is not aware to an extent that there is somebody called NHPRC who can protect you. And we are championing in the marketing division that value chain. Especially in the non-subsidy. If you have to build a house, how do you know that what questions I'm supposed to ask a builder? Are you registered? Is my house enrolled? Is my house covered with the warranty fund? We see that there's a lack of that.
So part of what is happening in that office is to develop those kind of educative programs to educate the public about their rights when they build the houses. And to know that there is this number, which is the call center number you can pick up if you get robbed by any builder, and we'll be there to assist you. So we are taking care of those things. It takes a little bit of money, but we are well fit and we're doing something about it. The last comment I want to make is a comment about the CEO. Yes, currently we do have an acting CEO, Dr. Mahachi. We do still have in our books Mr. Sipho Mashinini as the CEO. He is undergoing a disciplinary process. Whistleblowing, which went through to the SIU, through our Office of our Ministers, landed up in the Council. We appointed two foreign companies. When they came up with the report, they gave us confidence that there's a case to be answered by Mr. Mashinini. We prepared charges, and he's before the disciplinary hearing now. It is my hope that I will be appearing there this coming Saturday before a very experienced person, the former judge of the Labour Court, because matters are very serious. We won't be needing our evidence, or he has called us, maybe there's extra evidence or there's extra process to take place. It is our hope that by end of March we should be finished with this process. And as soon as we finish with that process, we'll be informed by the outcome. In the event that he is found guilty and dismissed, it is our responsibility, given the fact that we cannot leave the organization without leadership. We are very much conscious about that. But the lawyers under that position, we have now busy shortlisting the executive manager for quality assurance, executive manager for quite a number of other positions. The challenge we still have, which we are also busy with, because it's important to report to this committee, the whole issue debacle around Mrs. Somia, who was working for the SIU, who was employed by NHPRC. It's a serious matter. I want to assure this committee that next week we've been talking with her lawyers. We have finally agreed to meet ourselves with our lawyers and her lawyers to finalize this matter, because it's our view that this matter is not only about the relationship between her and NHPRC. It is a matter of public interest. So we are taking this thing very seriously. Maybe when we come back to report, we will give you the outcomes of those two. That's where we are, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we are appreciating the report and the progress that has been made. We also commend the department for the work that they have done in making sure that these institutions are being given the necessary support, because I understand that your department is always there to assist you. So we, with those viewers, we really appreciate, and we thank everybody who's here today. Department, Asinikoshi, Oresla. On Friday we meet, so you are still welcome on Friday to come with other institutions. Honorable members, thank you very much for your time. Friday. Neta, are you ready for Friday? Or we'll come when we're in the same sitting? Okay, fine, no problem. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Yeah.
Yes, Thank you.